The Parsha Vayetzeh opens with Yaakov's departure from home to Charan for a good long while. Vayetzeh starts with Vayetzeh, and Rashi has a comment on the word Vayetzeh itself. It's actually the second Rashi in the Pasuk, and it's a well-known comment, which, as we've learned from experience, is all the more reason to look into it. Vayetzeh, says Rashi, Lo haya tzarich lichtov ela vayelech Yaakov Charana. We always have an eye on economy. The Torah never says more than it needs to say in order to say what it wants to say. And if he's in Be'er Sheva, so just say Vayelech Yaakov Charana. Why does it emphasize or mention his exit? Ela Magid, it teaches us, says Rashi, She Yitzias Tzadik Min Hamokom Osa Rosham. Rashi saying, and it's a very interesting comment of Rashi, because his words are that when the tzaddik leaves the place, it makes an impression. As if to say, the word Vayetzeh is not information that we otherwise wouldn't have known. On the contrary, because we would have known that he left, had it just said that he went to Charan. You can't go to Charan without leaving. So by mentioning his leaving, it's telling us that it made a difference. It was its own event. It makes an impression. Shebizman sha tzadik ba'ir. As long as the tzadik is in the city, hu hoda, hu ziva, hu hadara, he's its glory, he's its splendor. And the Maharal in the Gur Aryeh explains in his way what is the connotation of these three terms. Hoda, ziva, hadara, they all sound the same, but there are three aspects. Yatsamisha, once he leaves. So then there goes the glory of the town. Pana Hoda, Pana Ziva, Pana Hadara. And those are Rashi's words. There's a little bit more of Rashi, which we'll get back to quite soon. And Mefarshim raised an interesting question. Another of our guiding principles when it comes to identifying ideas and concepts within the Torah is that we will always comment the first available opportunity. That being the case, if Rashi wishes to reveal to us and share with us this idea that when a tzaddik leaves the town, it makes an impression, where should he say that? Presumably the first time we see the Torah referring to people leaving town. But the first time is not Yaakov. Yaakov is not the first tzaddik to have left town. In the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, Avram, Sarah, etc., Vayetzu Laleches Arza Kanan. They left to go to Arza Kanan. Vayavo Arza Kanan. Seemingly, we have the same setup, whereby it didn't need to say that they left, because if they went to Kanan, clearly they left Haran. But the pasuk does say Vayetzu. Surely that is prime opportunity for us to say, you see, Yetzias Hatzadik Min Hamokom. Osa Roshem, and therefore, the question is, why did Rashi wait, so to speak, before making this comment on Vayetzeh when we've already had a Vayetzeh a few weeks back? And two classic responses to this question, which are quite different from each other, each one thought-provoking in its own way. The Kliyokar, one of the great Perushim on the Torah from the early Acharonim, Rav Shlomo Ephraim Lunshitz of Prague, the Kliyokar says, perhaps the reason why Rashi didn't comment earlier on is because maybe it didn't make such an impression earlier on. And should we ask, well why not? Well, says Kliyokar, in order to make an impression, you need really two people. You need the one who makes the impression and the one upon whom the impression is made. As if to say, there's room to understand that when we say that it's when a tzaddik leaves town, it makes a difference, but the people that are left have to be the type of people that it makes a difference to them, that the tzaddik's not there anymore. Because if all that you leave are people that don't appreciate a tzaddik, well then, upon who was the impression made? As far as everyone else is concerned, nothing's changed. And that, says Kliyokar, is the difference between the earlier case of Avram and this case. In the earlier case, Avram left, and Sarah left. And who else left with them? They took all the tzaddikim with them, so to speak. The hanefesh asher asu b'charan. Anyone who had an affinity with Avram went with him. So who's left? People that don't have an affinity with Avram. And therefore it could be that it didn't make an impression because they had no shaykhus. They had no association with Avram. And in the absence of people to be impressed, there is no impression to be made. Our situation is different. Because as much as Yaakov left, but who did he leave behind? Who's still in town? It's Yitzchak is still there. Rivka is still there. They are people who notice the difference when Yaakov is missing. And that's why, although Yaakov was not the first tzaddik to leave town, it could be that he's the first tzaddik to leave town and his leaving makes an impression because there were people who were able to appreciate the difference. Now, that's the approach of the Kli Yakar, and there is room to say that this raises a question. Because interestingly, although the Rashi is well known, when the tzaddik leaves town, it makes an impression. It's from the Medrash. The Medrash makes this comment on another case of tzaddikim, or in this case, tzidkonios, leaving town. And that is none other than the beginning of Megillas Rus, where who's left by the end of the first perek is Rus and Naomi. And the pasuk says, "Vateitzena." They left, meaning they left Moab to come back to Beis Lechem Yehuda when the famine had abated, and then they came back. And the pasuk also says that they left. And Chazal likewise comment that it says that they left because you see, the Yitzias Hatzadik Osa Roshem. Well, at the risk of asking too blunt a question, let us ask: who's left in Moab that would appreciate the tzaddikim? Moavim, not the greatest. And yet we see, I mean, the only people of quality there are Rus and Naomi. So when they leave, so there's no one left in that way. But still we see that the Medrash adduces this as an example of the principle of Yetzias HaTzadik, Osa Roshem. And that would perhaps therefore be something of a question mark on the Kli Yakar, because from the second example, we see that even if there isn't really anyone left, it still makes an impression somehow, which means the question would return. Avram leaving Charan seems to be analogous to Rus and Naomi leaving Moab. No great yichus left behind, but still, with Rus and Naomi, it made an impression. Why not with Avram? So that is certainly a fair question. And with that, we turn to the second answer that comes a little bit later on from Rabbi Yosef Nechemiah Kornitzer, who was a Rav in Krakow in the beginning of the 20th century. And he says slightly different. We've seen in our own travels that although the principle is that wherever possible, wherever applicable, Chazal and after them Rashi will identify a concept at the earliest available opportunity, but sometimes if there's a certain further chiddush or further dimension that will come out within that idea from a later opportunity, Rashi will wait because the idea is more so stated later on. It's worth the wait. What does that have to do with us? Says Rabbi Yosef Nechemia, Avram left town and Yaakov left town. They're both tzaddikim, but they're not the same. And certainly in terms of their relationship, shall we say, and their role within the city while they were there, it's not the same. Avram, his tent is open, all four sides, Kodich v'nyeseh v'yechol, he's a very public person, everyone knows him, everyone benefits from him in very tangible and appreciable ways. Compare that with Yaakov. What do we know about Yaakov? Yaakov Ishtam Yoshev Ahalim. He's not yet in the hosting business. He's in the learning business at that stage. He's Ba'ala Shel Shem, Ba'ala Shel Ever. I mean, that's where he is. So, says Rabbi Yosef Nechemia, had Rashi made this comment earlier on that when Avram, a tzaddik leaves town, people feel it, but if it was said about Avram, we may have made a mistake and thought that it's only true for a tzaddik like Avram. In a sense, everyone appreciates that. When Avram leaves, there's no more events, right? There's no more hospitality in that way. People really can tell the difference. They used to stop off by Avram, and now Avram's not there. So even people that don't have much of a sense of what a tzaddik is, but they realize that the town is not the same. But that is not the full extent of this principle. It is of course true for Avram, but the point is, it is also true for someone like Yaakov. As if to say, from a certain point of view, maybe on a conscious level, on a social level, if you would have asked people, once Yaakov left, how do you feel now that Yaakov isn't here anymore? Half of them might say roughly the same. The other half might say, Yaakov who? Because if they weren't together with him in the Beis HaMedrash, they might not really know him. And therefore, it's actually a further chiddush, because even someone like Yaakov, who's in the Ola Shel Shem and Ola Shel Eved, and being a tzaddik there, it makes a difference to the town. And that's really the point. Perhaps for reasons that people couldn't even put their finger on. Once Yaakov left, they felt, you know, the town's not the same. And I don't know why. And if you would say, maybe it's because Yaakov left, they wouldn't really maybe even understand what you're saying. But it still made a difference. And that's why the biggest oomph of this principle comes out with the much more private person like Yaakov, because a tzaddik is a tzaddik. And when the tzaddik leaves town, it makes an impression. So that's the approach of Rabbi Yosef Nechemia as a further suggestion to the earlier one of Kli Yochar. But as always, and as often the case, the question is as important as the answer. You know, for the answers, we have Kli Yochar and Rabbi Yosef Nechemia, but to keep an eye on these things, when Rashi says something, when the Midrash says something, why here, not earlier? And if so, why not? So, having checked in with a Rashi in the beginning of the Parsha, let us now take some moments to have a look at a number of the psukim in a certain vein. Let's begin by looking again at Pasuk Aleph. Ve'yetze Yaakov mi'ber sheva, u'mi'ber shova, v'yelech harona. And let's just take it as information. Now, as information, we should know, and I don't believe that we normally are conscious of this when we start by Yetze, but all of this information has been given to us already in the end of Parshas Toldos. It's very easy to forget from one Shabbos to the next, especially as at the end of Parshas Toldos, there's so much going on, and Esav wants to kill Yaakov, and all of that, it's very easy not to really note and take note of the fact that the Pasuk says, in Perek Kafches, Pasuk Hey, beginning of Shvi, Vayishlach Yitzchak es Yaakov, Vayelech Padena Aram. Yaakov went to Padan Aram, to Lavan's house, etc. So, the important question here, in terms of Parshanut, is, Vayetze has already happened at the end of Parshas Toldos. He's already gone, which means our pasuk from a certain point of view is a repetition. And the truth is, Rashi notes this, and it's the first Rashi. Popularly, the first Rashi is the one that we just said, but the actual first Rashi is addressing this point, that although it mentioned at the end of Toldos, because it interrupted with Esav's wedding, so it comes back. It's a concept which is called Nachzor l'inyan rishon. Having digressed, it cues us back in, so to speak, to what we were talking about before, which is a chiddush that the pasuk will work that way, and we need to examine all cases as to when that happens. But we do note that this pasuk does seem to be telling us things or nothing that we do not already know. Another interesting question or questions relates to pasuk Tet Zayin. Now, the beginning of Parshas Vayetze, of course, is Yaakov's dream, Vayifka b'makom, and he falls asleep, and Hashem promises him protection. Pasuk Tet Zayin reads, Vayikatz Yaakov mishnaso. Yaakov wakes up from his sleep. Vayomer and says, Achein yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh. Indeed, Hashem is here in this place. Vanocha lo yadati. I didn't know. As Rashi explains, if I knew, I probably wouldn't have slept here. If I knew that this is a Makom Kodesh, but I didn't know. And there are two interesting questions here, quite different from each other. Firstly, again, to be as particular as we can, the Pasuk begins, Pasuk Tet Zayin, by stating, Vayikatz Yaakov Mishnaso. Yaakov woke up from his sleep asked the Mefarshim, or there isn't really any other way to wake up. I mean, you can't wake up unless you were asleep, which means that the word Vayikatz itself incorporates the fact that he was sleeping. No one wakes up not from being asleep, which makes the word from his sleep redundant. And case in point, just to illustrate the idea, who else wakes up after a dream? Paro, at the beginning of Mikkei. So what does the pasuk say? He woke up! Vayikatz Paro! And we're not left in wondering, when did he wake up from his sleep? I mean, that's what waking up means. So if when it comes to Paro, it was enough to say, Vayikatz Paro, why in Yaakov's case did the pasuk have to emphasize that he woke up from his sleep? It's a good Shiloh. And the second question is, what exactly does Yaakov mean when he says, indeed Hashem is here, and I didn't know? Well, you know now. Does it make a difference? What's Yaakov emphasizing here when he says, Va'anochi lo yadati? Now, a further question, again, trying to take a good look at these opening psukim. In Pasuk Kaf, he makes this famous neder, Yaakov's neder, Vayidar Yaakov neder limor. And what does he say? Im yihyeh Elokim imadi. If Hashem will be with me, and if he will protect me, and if he will provide for me, and if he will bring me back, and if all of that, then Va'even Azoz, this place will be a place of avoda. But it's very interesting that Yaakov prefaces the whole thing by saying, Im, if Hashem will be with you. Im implies it may happen, it may not happen. But why would he think it wouldn't happen? Again, point of comparison. Yaakov is not the only one who has Hashem appear to him and promise him things. Hashem has promised things to Avram. He's promised things to Yitzchak. And they say thank you. They don't say, well, if it happens, I hope it does. And if it does, then presumably it will. I mean, that's Hashem didn't make it conditional. So why does Yaakov seem less than sure? If this will be, of course it will be. That's what the dream was all about. A famous question. And this is our final opening question, although there's much more to ask, but this will suffice for us. The final question is raised by the Gemara itself, because Hashem promises Yaakov protection here. V'hineh anochi imach, I'll be with you. U'shmaticha, I'll protect you. Well, when Yaakov comes back and he hears that Esav is coming, the pasuk says, Vayira Yaakov ma'od, he was afraid. He was distressed. The beginning of Vayishlach. And the Gemara asks the question, why are you afraid? Why are you distressed? You have an assurance of protection from Hashem. Most people would be very happy to have that. And if you do, so then you should be okay. He has a specific promise for protection. And when he hears that Esav is coming, he's afraid. The Gemara asks that question. And the Gemara famously answers that Yaakov was afraid, Shema Yigrom Hachet. Perhaps he would have become mesalid somehow in sin with Lavan, which renders him ineligible for the promises of assurance to be fulfilled, which is its own chiddush. Hashem's promise was given unconditionally. Yaakov understands that it is yet conditional on remaining on par, and he fears, therefore, that might not be the case. That's a chiddush. But that's what the Gemara says, and we've discussed that on other occasions. But for our purposes, it is of great value to retain the question of the Gemara. How can Yaakov respond with fear when he's been given an assurance? And the approach that I'd like to take here is based on the Akedas Yitzchak. The Akedas Yitzchak, one of the great later Rishonim, Rabbi Yitzchak Arama, and it's actually developed and expanded by one of the Darshanim, Gedolei HaDarshanim of the 1500s, the Bina Le'itim, Rabbi Azaria Figo, or Feggio, who was the Rav in Venice. He was the Rav in Pisa for a while. Perhaps he didn't like the people's leanings there, and he moved on to Venice. And his drushas, Bina Le'itim, 75 drushas, are classics. And he explains, and it's quite a chiddush, as follows. nevuah, and that's really what we're dealing with. When Hashem appears to someone, it's as a nevuah. When he appeared to Yaakov, it's as a nevuah. How does nevuah happen? The pasuk itself states, "Bachaloma daberbo." Hashem appears to the Navi in a dream. Well, with Yaakov, there was one difference. For as the Mefarshim say, and the topic of Nevuah is discussed extensively, it's one of those things that it's just not part of our lexicon in terms of what it means to be a good Jew and even a successful Jew. Nevuah is off the map for us currently, but it's a part of Judaism, ultimately. It's a part of Torah, and it has its parameters. And the Mefarshim explained that generally, when it says that Hashem appears to a person in a dream, it means that he receives the dream specifically for purposes of receiving nevuah. He's put into a dreamlike state for that reason, as if to say he's almost like, oh, he's overtaken by sleep for purposes of creating the setting of nevuah. Yaakov had a dream, but as the pasuk states, he wasn't necessarily overtaken by sleep, but he was asleep already. As if to say, there are two people that will have dreams. A person who's, for purposes of nevuah, he will be overtaken by sleep because nevuah has to happen, but a person might be asleep already. Now he can also have a dream. Well, the difference is, if a person is overtaken by sleep, he knows that it's nevuah, because what happened to him? Did he just get overtaken by sleep? But if a person was asleep already, just because it was nighttime, and then he has a dream, so the Gemara itself says something fascinating. Not every dream is nevuah. I mean, that we know. And moreover, the Gemara says there's psukim which tell us different things about dreams. One pasuk says, "Bachaloma daberbo," I'll speak to a person in a dream. Sounds like dreams, Hashem speaks to you. Another pasuk says, "Vachalomos hashavi daberun." Dreams speak vanity, nonsense. So the Gemara says, "Well, which is it? Because those are two different things. Does Hashem speak to you, or is it shav? Is it nothing?" So the Gemara says it depends. If some people receive nevuah in a dream and some people just see nonsense in a dream. It depends. And the chiddush of the Akedas Yitzchak, therefore, is, and it's such a fascinating way to really understand this whole section of the Parsha, is that because Yaakov, as we mentioned a couple of times, was not overtaken by sleep, but was asleep already, and then he had a dream, he didn't know what type of dream this was. He has a dream, and there's a ladder, and Hashem is talking to him, and that's very nice. And if it's nevuah, it's very nice. But he doesn't know, because maybe it's just a dream. And moreover, should we persist and ask, well, why would Yaakov would he have reason to think that it wasn't nevuah? Just beyond the fact that he doesn't know, does he have grounds to suspect that it's not nevuah? Says the Bina Le'itim, he does. I mean, we may ask, I mean, who's going to get nevuah if not Yaakov? That may well be. And Yaakov, Hashem has appeared to Avraham and Yitzchak, so in a sense, he's next in line. So it sounds reasonable. But nonetheless, says Bina Le'itim, there are other factors which seem to mitigate here. There are other factors which really have Yaakov wondering whether this was a bona fide nevuah. What are those factors? Says Bina Le'itim. Let's return to our questions and examine them again. The parsha begins by telling us, "Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, vayelech Charana." He went from Beersheba to Charan. We know that. We learned that at the end of Toldos, but we're told it again because it has implications for the dream. How so? Yaakov, in the beginning of the Parsha, is on his way from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz. And moreover, from a certain point of view, he is already treated as if he is in Chutz La'aretz. How so? Because how does the dream begin? Vinei Malachei Elokim, Olim V'yordimbo. Malachim, going up and down. And interestingly, Rashi raises the question. It's a bit of a yekish question, but Rashi says, is there a problem here? There's a problem. What goes up must come down. It's true for most things. But it's not true for Malachim, because they start up. And therefore, for Malachim, it is rather more correct to say what goes down must come up. As if to say, if the ladder is there to provide for flow of traffic with Malachim, this is Rashi's question. It should have said, "Vine Malachei Elokim, Yordim ve'Olim." How can it say Olim first and then Yordim? That's the background for Rashi's famous explanation from Chazal, that it's actually not the same group of angels that's going up that is going down. That's the point. And that's why the angels that had been accompanying him until now in Eretz Yisrael, they're going up, Olim. And then the angels of Chutz La'aretz, Yordim. That's Olim v'Yordim. It's a chiddush. Because Olim v'Yordim, when we think of angels going up and down, we think of maybe the same angels. But Rashi says no, it's a different group. Except the question is, but why is that happening now? Or what does that mean? It signifies that in a sense Yaakov is being related to as if he is already transferring out of Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, as the Maharal explains in the Gur Aryeh, because that's where he's heading. And therefore his direction is already considered to define his conceptual location. He's heading out, he's out. And then, by the way, he'll be heading in, he's in, even before he gets to Eretz Yisrael. Well, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Moed Katan and Daf Kaf Hei, one of the general principles of Nevuah is that it doesn't apply outside of Eretz Yisrael. Eina Nevuah Shora B'chutz La'aretz. Possibly an exception would be if a person has already received Nevuah in Eretz Yisrael, then they can continue to receive, as if to say, if they've opened their Nevuah account, so to speak, and they've already registered in Eretz Yisrael, then it can follow them out into Chutz La'aretz. Such was the case with Yechezkel. Yechezkel's famous Nevuah was in Bavel. So if Yechezkel is in Bavel, and the pasuk begins by saying Hayo Haya Devar Hashem El Yechezkel Ben Buzi. Hayo Haya is a double expression, and the Gemara explains it could only have happened because it had already happened. Meaning Yechezkel had already received Nevuah in Eretz Yisrael. That being the case, he can continue. But if you never got Nevuah before, so then it doesn't start in Eretz Yisrael. Which, by the way, just parenthetically, but I think it's an interesting point, and we have a long time to resolve it. There's a famous explanation of Yonah running away. Right? In Sefer Yonah, he runs away. How can he run away? What does that mean? Hashem says, "I want you to go to Tarshish and to Nineveh," and Yonah runs away. Where's he going to run? What does that mean? But the Mefarshim explain, I think, based on Chazal itself, that it means that he just wanted to get out of Eretz Yisrael, just out of range. He doesn't want Hashem to talk to him. And it's interestingly, it's meduyak in the pasuk. Again, the closer we look at the psukim, when a person runs away from something, it's normally called vayivrach mipnei something, right? Whatever it might be. In Yonah's case, it doesn't say vayivrach Yonah mipnei Hashem. It says vayivrach Yonah milifnei Hashem. That lamed, says the Malbim in his Pirush on Yonah, means that he can't run away from Hashem, but he wants to run away from being in a state that's called lifnei Hashem. I.e. in Eretz Yisrael. And that's why he hires the first ship and he just wants to go anywhere. It doesn't matter where he's going because his focus is not where it's headed, but where it's headed away from. He just needs to leave shore. I'm sure the Mefarshim asked this question, but seemingly, according to the Gemara, it wouldn't help him because if he's already received Nevuah in Eretz Yisrael, and that's how Sefer Yonah begins, so that he has bad mazel, so to speak, that he's already a Navi. So leaving Eretz Yisrael won't make a difference. In any case, be that as it may. The point is, this is the first idea that has Yaakov wondering, can it be Nevuah? The dream begins by him being considered as if he's in Chutz La'aretz. There's no Nevuah in Chutz La'aretz. So what is this dream? Nevuah? It doesn't check out? That's the first point. What's the second point? The Gemara, it's a famous statement in the Gemara in Maseches Nedarim and Daf Lamed Ches, because as we said, the qualifications and the rules and the byways of Nevuah are discussed in Chazal and in the Mefarshim. And the Gemara says, in order for a person to be eligible for Nevuah, he needs to have four qualifications. And they are, he needs to be a Chacham, so he has to be wise, he needs to be Gibur, has to be strong, Oshir needs to be rich, and Onav, he needs to be humble. And as the Balei HaMusar say, if you have the first three, then you're actually an Onav. If you don't have any of them, so then it's not that hard to be humble. But the point is the whole thing together. These are qualifications. Well, Yaakov doesn't have currently all those four qualifications. He is a Chacham. He is a Gibor. And of course, he's Yaakov, he's an Onav, but he's not rich. Not now. Something happened, as we know. Eliphaz came on the instructions of his father to kill him. Yaakov gave him all his things, because a poor person is like he's dead. And in fact, the way that we see that is in the Pasuk itself. Because Pasuk Yud Aleph discusses his preparation to go to sleep. And what does it say? Vayikach me'avni amokam, vayasem arashosa, he's got to fall asleep. What does he have? Nothing. What's his bed look like? It's the ground. What's his pillow? It's a rock. That's it. He doesn't have anything. So he's lacking the full complement of qualifications that a person needs. That's number two. So number one, location is wrong. Qualifications are lacking. Anything else? Pasuk Tet Zayin. Now we get a deeper appreciation of what Yaakov means when he says, I see now Hashem is here. Indeed, Hashem is here. I didn't know. That's interesting. So what if you didn't know? So Yaakov is saying, well, what are the chances that it's Nevuah? For a Nevuah, a person needs to be in a mode, in a state of mind, where he's sensitive to matters of Kedusha. Here I am in the Makom HaMikdash, I didn't even know where I was. Fundamentally unprepared. And by the way, understandably so. Running for his life, the risk of presuming. But the point is, that's why Yaakov says, "Vanochel yadati." I'm not compatible with my frame of mind with receiving Nevuah. I'm not settled, not sensitive, And so what about this dream? I don't know. Final point. Let's come back to the pasuk which says, "Vayikatz Yaakov mishnoso." He woke up from his sleep, and we raise the question: well, anyone who wakes up from their sleep. That's what it means to wake up. So why does the pasuk say mishnoso? Says Bina Le'itim, the Mefarshim further explain that because Nevuah is presented to the Navi in a dream, but when the Nevuah finishes, when the message finishes, he normally wakes up straight away. And that's something, once again, by point of comparison, Lahavdil, but even in Paro's case, where his dream was like a true dream, as soon as he had the dream, he woke up straight away. The Pasuk says, Vayikatz Paro. And then he went and fell asleep again, to have the second dream, and then he woke up again. Which means that now there's a new understanding of what our pasuk means when it says Vayikatz Yaakov mishnoso. He woke up from his sleep, meaning he didn't wake up from the dream. He had the dream, but then he just carried on sleeping. And then it was only from his sleep that he woke up. But that sounds like he wasn't taking leave of a Nevuah. Because he just carried on sleeping after the dream. So this is now very interesting. And all of these ideas combine to give us now a different look at Yaakov's Neder, which begins by saying, Im Yiyeh Elokim Imadi, if Hashem will be with me. And our question was, well, what do you mean by if? In other words, what, there's no ifs about it. No ifs, no buts. It's you got an assurance. But because Yaakov doesn't know whether it was an actual Nevuah or not, he hopes that it is, but he doesn't know. So he's got to find out. And that's why he said, if this will really happen, if Hashem does for me all the things that I dreamt that he would do for me, then I'll know. Vaya Hashem, Lilo Kim. Then I'll know that Hashem was really connecting with me through Nevuah. Now, all of this brings us to the point where Yaakov returns to Eretz Canaan. He's had his time with Lavan and it's had its ups and downs. But one of the conditions that Yaakov says, in order for me to know that it was real Nevuah, is Vishavti Vishalom El Beis Avi, that I will come back in peace to my father's house. And where do we find Yaakov in the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach? He's on his way to his father's house, and he receives news. And the news is Esav is coming with 400 men. And Yaakov is afraid. And the reason why he's afraid is because this is the final stage before he is able to know whether it was an actual nevuah, because the conditions that will convince him of such was that he returns in peace to his father's house, but he's not there yet, and Esav sounds like he's coming to wage war with him. And that's why, as all Mefarshim note this point, Vayira Yaakov Ma'od Vayetzer Lo. He was afraid and he was distressed. What's he distressed about? Presumably the same thing he's afraid about. So why are there two expressions? Vayira and Vayetzer, fear and distress. But the Bina Le'itim says because the fear itself led to a certain distress. The fear was maybe Esav is coming to kill him. And if that's true, then that led to Vayetzer Lo, because maybe now that tells him that it was all just a dream. And that's a cause of tsar for him. And that's why he reacted that way. And it is only as events play themselves out positively, everything is relative and everything is within context, but positively with Esav that finally Yaakov knows. So this is really a fascinating number one in terms of the parshanot, the questions that are raised and the answers that are given. But I think al kulana, the overarching idea, which is amazing, is that Yaakov was never sure, according to the Kedas Yitzhak, was it a real nevuah? He didn't know until the end. And I think there's room to ponder the meaning of that, because obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu can communicate nevuah to Yaakov in a way that Yaakov will full well know that it's nevuah. Avram knew, Yitzhak knew. Why was Yaakov given to be uncertain? Why was he almost caught unaware, so to speak, by nevuah to the extent that he wasn't even sure that it was nevuah? But I think the point is, and perhaps there's emes here, because Yaakov is, this is Maisa Ovis, this is the Parsha of Golos. I mean, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Shava, right? There's no breaks in Parshas Vayetze, it's just one long, confusing time. And Vayelech Charona, indeed, as the Medrash says, he was going to a place of Charon Af, that's Maisa Ovis, we're going into Golos. And from a certain point of view, when Hashem says that he will be with Yaakov and protect him in Laban's house, that's Maisa Ovis, for Hashem being with the Jewish people and protecting them when they're in Golos. But when the Jewish people go into Golos, they're also not fully prepared to have a connection with the divine presence. If they were, they wouldn't be going into Golos. The very fact that it's reached that point means that they're from a certain point of view, categorically unprepared, ill-prepared, and unqualified to have that connection. But what's the point? The connection persists nonetheless. And therefore, it's specifically the nature, so to speak, of Hashem being with a person in Golos, and being with the Jewish people in Golos, as he is until they come back, that you don't have the normal conditions where they've gotten themselves ready, and it's expected, because Golos means that it's a dire situation. And Hashem says, as dire as it is, he'll be with you. And we don't always see it, and there's doubtful times themselves, and that's those times of Hester upon him. That's the atmosphere that really accompanies and characterizes the whole nevuah that Hashem gave to Yaakov in the beginning of the parasha. So very, very thought-provoking idea and approach from the Bina Le'itim, as we said, based on the Akedas Yitzhak. Now, I'd like to move forward to the birth of the Shvatim, and the one who is spoken about quite a bit is Reuven, as we will see. So let's move to Perek Kaftes, Pasuk Lamed Beis. So we've skipped over a few things, a lot has happened. Yaakov is married to Leah and Rachel, and now Leah conceives and bears him a child. Vatahar Leah vateilet ben. So Leah conceives, she bears him a son. Vatekrash Reuven, and she calls him Reuven. Interestingly, Leah gives the names to the first, the first two, and also number four, Yaakov, or someone gives the name to Levi. Vatar levatel ben vatikrash Reuven. She calls him Reuven. Ki amra, for she said, ki ra'ah Hashem ba'anik, for Hashem saw in my affliction. Ki atoye vani ishi, for now my husband will love me. And that's the basis of the name of Reuven. Ki ra'ah Hashem ba'anik. And that's the pasuk. Rashi has a comment here, and it's from the Gemara in Maseches Brachos and Daf Zayin. And Rashi opens, Rabbi Seinu Pirshu. Rabbi Seinu explained as follows. Amra, she said, you know what's Reuven? Re'u ma bein bini levein chami. Reuven, see the difference between my son and my father-in-law's son. Who's her father-in-law? Yitzhak. Who's his son? The other son, Esav. See the difference between Reuven and Esav. How so? Shemochar b'chorah leYaakov. Consider, Esav sold the b'chorah to Yaakov. V'zeh lo b'chorah leYosef. But this one, Reuven, he didn't sell, or he won't sell his b'chorah to Yosef. It's going to be taken from him, because he'll forfeit the Bechora, and it's going to be given to Yosef. Yosef is his own type of Bechor. He's the Bechor from Rachel. Velo irer alav. But Reuven does not contest that. Velo ochelo irer alav. Not only does he not contest it, Elisha bikish lo tziyum min abor. He's the one that is making more effort out of anyone else to actually save Yosef. You see the difference? Reuven, you see the difference between my son and my father-in-law's son, namely between Reuven and Esav? Now, as we can appreciate, there's a basic question with regards to this entire comment of the Gemara and Rashi, for that matter. And they're two separate questions, because the Gemara has its reasons for saying things. Rashi has his reasons for bringing things. The Gemara may say something because there's an added element here. Rashi will say something because there's an issue that needs resolving here. But what could possibly need resolving? Reuven, why does one need to give a name or provide the basis for a name when the basis has been given in the pasuk itself? For once again, she calls him Reuven. And in case you're wondering why, you don't need to wonder why. The pasuk is about to tell you. Ki amra ki ra'ah Hashem ba'ani. So she herself has given the reason, whatever the reason means. And it's very similar to Shimon. Why is she called Shimon? Kishama Hashem, Kisnu Anochi, etc. So she's given the name and the reason. So if she's given the reason, why does Rashi need to provide the reason? Why does the Gemara need to provide it? And why does Rashi need to quote it? The Be'er Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Horowitz, one of the classic Mefarshei Rashi, explains that if we want to understand why Rashi quotes the second reason, you have to look at the name Reuven. And when you do, you'll see there has to be a second reason. Because if all there is to it is Ra'ah Hashem Ani, which means he's called Reuven, why? Because Hashem saw. It's very similar to Shimon. With Reuven, Hashem saw. With Shimon, Hashem heard. Well, what's Shimon called? He's called Shimon after hearing. So Reuven should have been called Reuyon after seeing. They're exactly the same. If all there is to it is the element of seeing and hearing, so if Shama is Shimon, then Ra'ah is Reuyon. So where does the base come from? Now, it's true that it says, Ki Ra'ah Hashem Be'onyi, right? There's a base there, Be'onyi, but that base is not part of the word itself. That's a suffix. That's a prefix. That's an in, that's a with. So in other words, the name does not, it seems to contain more than the reason given in the pasuk. Well, explain. So what's with Reuven? And that's why Chazal say, there's got to be more. And there is. Re'u ma bein bini levin chami. Now, that's the first classic, shall we say, explanation as to why the Gemara saw there's more in this name and Rashi saw fit to quote it. There is a second point, and again, all these things are chinuch for us in terms of how to pay attention to the psukim. This is said in the name of the Vilna Gaon, Maskil HaDavid says as well, as to others. that, you know how the Gemara knows that there's more to the background to Reuven's name than the reason given by Leah? Because if you look at all of the other names of the Shvatim, you will see that, for example, Shimon, let's see Shimon, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Batar Od Vatelet Bein. Okay, so she's had another son. And then what happens? Vatomer, she says, Ki Shema Hashem, Kisnu Anochi. Hashem saw, heard me. And she called him Shimon. Next, Levi. Vatomer, she said, Atap HaMilevei Shilai, and that's why he's Levi. Number four, Vatomer, Hapam Odes Hashem. And she called him Yehuda. In other words, we see that the order in terms of reason and name is that first the reason is mentioned and then the name, which of course makes perfect sense because the reason comes before the name. But now, when we come back and we look at Reuven, so we see something interesting. Vatahar Leah Vatelet Bain and Vatikosh Reuven. She calls him Reuven. Why? Doesn't say. I mean, it does, but afterwards, after the fact, Ki Yama, for she said, Ki Ra'ashem Ba'ani, Ki Atoya Vani Ishi. So with regards to Reuven, we have the name before the reason, but in keeping with the order of the other sons, it should have said she had a son, and she said, and therefore she called him Reuven. Why does it give him his name before mentioning the reason? And that's why, says the Vilna Gaon, the Gemara understands that there's another reason behind the name. He's already called Reuven, even before we get onto this reason that she said. Now, if that's the case, and all of this is really just background to how does the Gemara know, and why does Rashi mention it, but the question still remains, the Pasuk does say that Leah said one reason. It sounds like she didn't mention both reasons. He's called Reuven, and we understand his background to that, but the Pasuk says explicitly, she says, Ki Ra'ah Hashem Ba'ani, Ki Atah Ye'avani Ishi. Well, If there are indeed two reasons, why is one of them in the Pasuk and one of them in Rashi? If there are two reasons and they're two equal partners, shall we say, in the name, a background to the name of Reuven, why are they not both in the Pasuk? The Pasuk doesn't mind. If there are two reasons, Yalev Yavo, bring them in and mention both of them. Why does she only mention one of them? Well, in a sense, to answer why the Gemara's reason, which is the second reason, or actually more correctly, the first reason, chronologically, is not mentioned in the Pasuk, we really need to consider what it means when it says that, look at the difference between my son and my father-in-law's son. Look at the difference between Reuven and Esav. I mean, so far, there's an idea that we haven't really been addressing, and that is the difference between them has yet to come out. And moreover, it's really based on decisions that they'll make. It's up to Reuven if he wants to save Yosef. Esav has already made his decision. He's already upset with Yaakov. He parted willingly with the Bechorah, and then he's upset about it. That's already happened. Reuven hasn't happened yet. So it's a very interesting situation, because here's Leah, and she's comparing and contrasting the behavior of two people, but one of their behaviors doesn't exist yet. And moreover, he is a human being. He has Bechira. He can choose whatever he wants to choose. And maybe he'll choose to save Yosef. And also the background, even to saving Yosef, means that Yosef is the Bechor because Reuven lost the Bechorah. But why did he lose the Bechorah? Because of acting improperly in a certain way, right? With regards to the whole Maaseh Bilha, etc. Which means, in order to get to the result that Leah is describing according to the Gemara, it's based on very, very specific decisions of Reuven, some of which were heroic, that is to say, saving Yosef, some of which were not heroic, that is to say, what happened with Bilhah. But he's just born now. None of this happened. None of this has happened yet. And none of this will necessarily happen. What then is the meaning of almost... It's a contrast in advance. For this reason, says the Maharsha, in his Pirush to Maseches Bava Basra and Daf Kuf Kaf Gimel, it is clear, and this is a fascinating idea, not for sure Leah cannot enunciate this idea. How can she possibly give background and start to be talking about things that haven't happened yet? It can't be. That will interfere with Bechira for sure. But moreover, not only can't she talk about it, it's much more likely that she herself didn't know about it. Not consciously, not fully. As if to say, there is a concept of what's called nisnaba, velo yoda ma nisnaba, that a person can receive nevuah, but they're not entirely conscious of what it is that they are enunciating. It will actually happen quite a few times, yet in Chumash Bereishis, over the parshas of Vayeshev and Miketz and Vayigash. And clearly, says the Maharshar, Leah herself does not fully, doesn't have a full crystallized understanding of what it is behind giving this name. But she does know that there's a difference between them. If you would ask her, she couldn't explain it. She can't say. She wouldn't know. Reuven will lose the Bechorah. How would she know that? And he'll say to Yosef, what's Yosef doing in a pit? Maybe she should tell someone about that. But she doesn't know. But should we ask, well then what's the value of having a Nevuah if you don't know? But there is value. Because what Nevuah represents is bringing certain, the energy that will allow, the spiritual energy that will allow for certain events to exist, that is expressed in the world. It's in its own way preparing the ground for that. But it doesn't always involve the conscious realization of the one even who's pronouncing the Nevuah. And therefore, say the Mefarshim, don't be surprised if that reason is not explicit in the Pasuk. It can't have been something that Leah actually said. But what's all the more fascinating, just putting really these ideas together, it's interesting to ponder. If you would ask Leah, for example, why did you call your second son Shimon? So she could tell you, and she would say, because of that, that's why it's called Shimon. And it all checks out. But then you say, well, let's go back to Reuven. Why did you call him Reuven? So Leah would say, well, because I told you. I mean, if you read the Pasuk, because Hashem saw in my affliction, Kivah Hashem Ba'ani. But if you would persist and say, yeah, but why did you call him Reuven? You know, why didn't you call him like Reuyon? Like you called the second one Shimon. So I hope what we're saying is correct. But it could be that Leah perhaps could not really answer that question. She couldn't give an accounting for it. Because the Ruba Bain Bani Levain Bani, all she would know is that no, his name is not Reuven, it's Reuven. She knows there's a difference between him and Esav. In what way could you specify? He's just been born. How could I specify? But I know there's a difference between them. Don't ask me more than that. I don't know. But I know that's what his name is to be Reuven. Very interesting. And as a final point here, because there's so many different angles to look at Divrei Chazal in this way. On the one hand, she's saying this, and what does she mean by saying this, and how much of those events does she actually know, and what does she say, and what does she not say, etc. But the further question is, but why is it important for her to establish this? Especially as, I think, there's probably better things to say about Reuven than that he's different than Esav. It's not really a great compliment, as if to say, and I think most people are better than Esav. But this is, you see, it's like a core characteristic. You see how different he is than Esav? Firstly, I should hope so. And secondly, they're all different than Esav, each one in his own way. Because anyone who's good is different than Esav. So, but why is she emphasizing this with regards to Reuven? So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says that, again, just to put us into that, as much as we can, into that situation, to the whole scenario, it's very important to establish that Reuven is different than Esav. And the reason is, with Leah, actually, we have a first. And we might not detect it. But the pattern has been so far that the firstborn, the older, hasn't really done that well in terms of being part of the program of what will lead to the Jewish people. I mean, who do we have on record, basically? We have, of Avram's children, you've got Ishmael and Yitzchak, and Ishmael is the oldest, and he just fades. He gets pushed to the side. He doesn't make it. And then we keep going. And then you have Yitzchak. And Yitzchak has two sons, and the oldest is Esav. But he doesn't continue. The oldest one doesn't really seem to fare that well. And moving even into the Imahos. I mean, who do you have? You have Rivka and Lavan, and Lavan is not such a goyse gedula, and Rivka emerges. So it's a fascinating situation to look at it in this way, because Leah is the oldest of the two sisters. And the track record of the oldest so far has not been to do that well. And that's why, but of course things change. But it's important to emphasize that it has changed. It really is a chiddush, as if to say, look at me. My children are not like Esav because I'm not like Esav, especially with the background, as we know, that from a certain point of view, Leah was scheduled to, or forecast to marry Esav, however that would have looked. But and therefore it's critically important for her to emphasize she's not like Esav and her son is not like Esav. And indeed they weren't. I mean, they're categorically, and from there we begin the Mahalach, whereby, I mean, he is the oldest. And therefore she's not like Esav in the sense that she's the oldest, but she's part of the program. Her son, looking back in previous generations, whoever comes in first doesn't look like he's going to make it. But she says, no, he will make it. He's not like Esav, because that's really the chiddush of Yaakov. Mitoso, Shlema, all of the Shvatim, each one in their own way, are part of the program. So these are some of the dimensions to consider with regards to this well-known comment of Rashi, with regards to the naming of Reuven, and we'll leave that over there.